This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. When we talk about harm reduction, when it comes to the problem of drug addiction, what many don't realize is that the harm reduction focus isn't just for the addict, but it's for the entire community. And this is the case with the Argument for Needle Exchange. These programs have proven to reduce the spread of AIDS and hepatitis all through the community. So why aren't there needle exchange programs in Texas? Should San Antonio have the first? We invite you to call in as we talk about a needle exchange proposal for Bexar County. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. You can email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this afternoon by Colleen Bridger, the director of the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District, Dr. Lucy Wilkening, the assistant professor at the Weick School of Pharmacy at the University of the Incarnate Word, and Neil Lane, a local attorney who's been an advocate for needle exchange programs. He represented people who were charged with crimes for conducting one here in Bexar County in 2008. And welcome to The Source, all of you. It's great to have you here. So, Colleen Bridger, tell me what's being proposed.
So what's being proposed is that we work with the DA's office. The DA's office has said that they are not opposed to syringe exchange. And so what we want to do is let people in the community know through our summit tomorrow that they don't need to operate underground and that they can come above ground. They can take advantage of the resources that we have in the community for them, and they can start advertising for their services.
So when the DA says he is not opposed to this, so are there, what are the legal problems? What is it illegal to have a needle exchange in Texas? Neil Lane?
Yes. The state of the law is that there's a paraphernalia law, and it's illegal to distribute drug paraphernalia unless you have specific legislation, which in this case we do, that permits Bexar County to have a pilot project to conduct a needle exchange, a syringe exchange, in order to determine its effectiveness and to serve the people of Bexar County. And let's see how it does. Is it consistent with the great results throughout the rest of the country?
So let me go over that again. So if there's the law says paraphernalia. Mm-hmm. And so how is that having a needle exchange a workaround the law if it says you can't have drug paraphernalia?
Okay, so the original law would be a drug paraphernalia law. For instance, a private citizen cannot go out and start selling drug paraphernalia to another citizen. That's against the law. But the legislature passed legislation creating a pilot project under the auspices of the county to conduct needle exchange so that people under the auspices of the county can conduct this program, can exchange clean needles for dirty needles, take away the needles that are infected with potentially HIV, hepatitis C, take those away, dispose of them, and actually have an opportunity for that addict to get help, to get information about therapy and other ways to avoid harm to himself and others or herself and others.
All right. So Dr. Lucy Wilkening at the Fike School of Pharmacy at the University of Incarnate Word, can you tell me what role y'all are going to be playing?
Yes, sir. Excuse me. As an educator, we obviously train pharmacy students and work with other professional students at the Fike School of Pharmacy. And also, as a component of my position, I also work with patients with psychiatric illness. But we do offer education, and this is a component, harm reduction. The concept of harm reduction is something that we teach in our curriculum. In addition to that, we also teach our students about Narcan, the overdose reversal agent, and even just the concept of what a syringe service program is. So a big component of what I do is education. And I think it's also important to note when we think about what kind of services are offered by a syringe service program, it's not just the provision and exchange of clean and used needles and syringes. It's also important to consider that these programs also can provide screenings for HIV, hepatitis C, hepatitis B. They serve as a means of keeping our communities clean by collecting used needles and syringes. They also serve as a means of providing people with overdose reversal agents and ultimately connecting people with addiction treatment services. A person who uses a syringe service program is 5 times more likely to engage in addiction treatment services as compared to somebody who doesn't. So the major role here is providing education about these programs and what all they can offer.
Got a message from Carlos on Twitter. He says he's all for it. Good public health policy is to treat addiction as a disease and not as a crime. So, Colleen Bridger, with the Metropolitan Health District, do y'all have a firm proposal ready to go, like how this would work, or y'all are still trying to design that?
This is an iterative process. The first step is the summit to let people who are currently doing exchange programs know that it's legal to do so. The next step, followed 6 to 8 weeks after the summit, is to host a training program for anybody who wants to learn how to start a syringe services program. They will come to this training, and we will give them all of the resources and how-tos that we have compiled and help them start their programs. About a month after that, we will have an official press event where we will announce the locations of the various syringe services programs that have started throughout the city now that the DA's office has given its official okay to proceed.
So I've heard for years that there have been these underground needle exchange programs happening in San Antonio, and I've reached out to the people that I've heard that are running them, and I say, hey, can I tag along? I'd love to do a story on you. And they do not want, they are freaked out. They are very scared of law enforcement. They don't want to be in being brought out of the shadows. They want to be able to continue doing what they're doing without any sort of interference. And also that they say that there's police officers out there that know what they're doing, and they let them do it because they ask an officer, if you frisk somebody and you poke yourself with the needle, wouldn't you rather think that that needle was clean rather than dirty, infected with somebody who has, you know, has been shooting up, has been passed around, has got all these other things, components on it that you don't want. So, Neil Lane, tell me about why that atmosphere exists here in San Antonio, that the people who are willing to take the chance to help these individuals dealing with addiction exchange clean needles for dirty, but they're freaked out by the fact that they could be brought in front of a judge.
Well, about 8 years ago, there was a group in town, the Bear Area Harm Reduction Coalition, and they had members who would go out and distribute needles, exchange them for clean needles. And it was, part of them were missionaries that were funded by a church, locally church, St. Mark's Episcopal, bought a van for them. But the whole, around the country, there had been a number of programs lawfully run in other states. And then we knew in the state of Texas that every other major metropolitan area had a needle exchange program, often run by members of the church and so forth. But it was always kept very quiet because it was known if it became a political football, they could face prosecution. In fact, that's really what happened. There were four of these people who were cited with misdemeanor tickets for violations of the paraphernalia law, and that's how I had got involved in the legal end of it. But they knew that if they raised their head up and they became a political football, that the whole program could suffer.
All right, we're going to talk more about that and how the program operates, what are the risks involved, and what other components there are to it, how having a needle exchange program can also lead to outreach to bring people into recovery. So this is not just a way to enable drug addiction, as some people might fear, but it's also a way to help bring people off the drug addiction as well. We want to hear from you. What do you think? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We got a 1 minute break and we'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. I'm sure you've heard by now that we have an opioid problem in the nation, in the state, and here in Bexar County. What's being done to fight it? Well, now there's a discussion of a needle exchange program here in Bexar County. How does that fight drug addiction if we're helping addicts exchange their dirty needles for clean needles? It's not that hard to figure out. You're helping people stay, avoid diseases that they don't bring home to their family, and diseases that they don't spread through the community. Also, it's an opportunity for contact, which would bring about maybe outreach for recovery. We want to talk about that this afternoon. What concerns do you have for a needle exchange program here in Bexar County, and would you support something like this? The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980, and a callers. You can be anonymous if you want to talk about the problems that you're seeing out on the street. So, Colleen Bridger, we've had District Attorney LaHood in for quite a while. Why has it taken this long? And now he's a lame duck, essentially, because he's been primaried out. Why has it taken this long to finally figure out that we could do this?
One of the first meetings I attended as the new health director for both the city and the county was a meeting that Judge Wolf called with the DA's office to talk about what do we need to do to reinvigorate syringe exchange in Bexar County. So there have been a series of meetings happening behind the scenes to make sure that all of the right people were in the right places with all the right parts. And so that's why I'm excited about the summit tomorrow. That's the first public opportunity that we have to talk about this, but this has been in the works for about a year.
Can you talk a little bit more about this summit?
Sure. So the summit is tomorrow, and the name of the church escapes me.
I know it's at Donaldson and Campman at the corner. At the Living Point Church at Woodlawn Point.
There we go.
Living Church at Woodlawn Point.
Okay. So it is from 8 o'clock until 12 o'clock at that church. The first 30 minutes are opportunities for people to learn about resources in a fair-like environment. They go booth to booth. They learn about the different resources. Then we'll have welcoming remarks by Judge Wolf, as well as Denver McClendon. And then we will have an overview of what syringe services programs do. And we'll have some opportunities to hear from the DA's office and publicly state that the DA's office is supportive of this. Then we'll transition to some really kind of quick opportunities for people to learn about the different resources that are out there. So, for example, we have a treatment map that we've developed through the Opioid Task Force. We'll be unveiling that, letting people know how to find that, how to find treatment. There will be kits available for participants that have everything you need in a clean needle kit that we'll be giving out. Other opportunities for prevention and just back-to-back-to-back presentations about resources that are available in Bexar County to help providers of syringe services programs.
So, Dr. Lucy Wilkening, can you talk a little bit about, what's in these kits and how that works?
Sure. So, kits can vary by syringe service program. And I can talk about some of the ones that I've seen in the past. In some syringe service programs, you will find provision of the needles and syringes themselves, but in addition to that, alcohol swabs, ties, cookers, so things that a person may use to prepare drugs for injection. You may also see filters that people may use when they draw.
Like a cotton ball?
Things that they would use to filter through a needle if they were drawing up drugs from a cap. In some other programs, you may also see Narcan or naloxone, the overdose reversal agent that's included in the kit as well. That a person may be able to use in the community should an overdose happen. So essentially, when we think about the different pieces of equipment that a person may use to inject drugs, every piece of that equipment has been demonstrated to have an infection risk if it's shared or recycled, including a tourniquet a person may use or the needle or syringe itself. So these kits do intend to be comprehensive, and the primary goal being preventing infection and contagion spread.
So it's not just a needle for needle. You turn in a dirty needle, you'll get this kit. Is that right?
Correct.
And so who funds these programs? And there's limitations on federal dollars and what can they be spent on?
So right now, the funders are various nonprofits and religious organizations throughout the community. The way the legislation was written, only the county as a public entity can fund it. But there are lots of partnership opportunities that we're all exploring right now that go beyond just providing the money for the purchase of the clean syringes.
So it used to be that the federal law was that no federal dollars can be used for needle exchange programs, but since 2016, the law has been relaxed so that you can use the money for operations, but you can't use the money for the actual needles and the kits themselves. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. So, Neil Lane, can you talk a little about how what the law and how this law came about? And I know that we have the late Ruth Jones McClendon, representative, to sort of credit for her work in this. She was tireless in trying to bring a needle exchange program to Bexar County.
Well, Ruth actually went out with the crew that did the needle exchange in San Antonio. And she spoke movingly about being out one time with the group. And she saw a young man who had been a member of her church. And here he was in these extreme, you know, circumstances. And her heart broke for him. But he was given some help. And later on, she testified before the legislature in support of another bill that she saw him come into church, and she knew that he had been saved through the efforts of these people. And this really began in her heart as a compassionate response to people suffering. Well, no one really knew what she was up to, candidly, until after the legislative session was over. And it turned out that she had put a bill in for a pilot program for Bexar County for a needle exchange program to give the force of law and the authority of law behind a compassionate program. And so she's a real hero to everyone who wants to care for these people as their family, not just as strangers or living in extreme circumstances.
Let me go to the phone lines. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. And Millie Ray is on the air line. And Millie Ray, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I have two questions. I believe the first question was already addressed about the funds and where it's going to come from to purchase the kits. But my second question was, what happens if you have, you know, an influx of minors that come in? Do you have to alert their parents? Is there some kind of legal things that you guys have to go to, or can they be completely anonymous?
All right, Millie Ray, thank you for that question. And I think that's a really good question. And so, Colleen Bridger, you know, if you're... Do y'all check, is it anonymous? How do these programs work?
So every program is different, but there's no prohibition for anonymous exchange. So a program could decide that what they wanted to operate was an anonymous exchange program, in which case they would not collect any demographic information and would not know the age of the person turning in the needles. And again, I feel like, you know, the purpose behind syringe exchange is to decrease the risk of an infectious disease. And so even if somebody is under the age of 18, if they are addicted to drugs and are using needles to inject those drugs, we don't want to compound the problem by also having them acquire HIV in the process of doing those drugs.
Right. So the issue of picking up the dirty needle in exchange for the clean needle. So if there weren't a program like this, what happens to those dirty needles? Do they just get scattered about?
They do. And I've been surprised when I'm in our parks at how frequently I come across needles just thrown on the ground. So that's another public health concern, is are the kids playing in the parks picking up these dirty needles? Are the workers who are having to pick up these needles being exposed to needle sticks? And then, as we mentioned, police officers, when they're frisking somebody, if they are patting somebody down and they get a needle stick from a dirty needle, all of those are potential ways to pass along either Hep B, C, or HIV.
So suddenly that dirty needle that's been cast aside on the playground or at the park now has value to an addict, because they can turn that in and get a clean needle and get the entire kit. So it would be less likely for that needle to be discarded because, you know, they want the entire, everything that goes with it.
Exactly. And, I mean, you know, folks generally want to do the right thing. If they don't know how to do the right thing, if they don't know where to turn in the dirty needles, then they may just throw them about. But if they know what to do with them, then they're more likely to bring them in for exchange.
Got a caller here, and it's Juan. And Juan, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. I think this program is great. I come from a very dysfunctional family. A bunch of us heroin addicts, brothers, cousins, uncles, and for years we've all used same syringes, same cookers, same everything. And now that we've gotten older, all of us are Hep C positive, every one of us. And we're pretty sure that's where it came from all of us using the same syringes for years. And I think this program would really help.
All right, Juan, thank you for your call. Your experience really helps us get an idea of what is out there. So, Dr. Lucy, when the needles that we're talking about, the syringes, are these the short safety needles, or are they the longer ones, or is that all being figured out?
Each program may have some slight variations in what needles and syringes that they may provide. I will say that these are not insulin syringes, so not the needles and syringes that you would use if you were injecting insulin if you had diabetes, let's say, because those are too small and not intended for intravenous injection. So most programs will provide 1 or 2 inch needles, things that have the ability to access a vein, and then a syringe that's large enough to hold a bigger volume than what a diabetes syringe.
Right. So so the shorter needle, people are using the diabetes syringes because that's what they can get. They're easy to get. And those are more hazardous because it has a longer needle on it, right?
So you are correct. The diabetes syringes can present more problems for somebody who's attempting to inject drugs intravenously, because what you'll notice is because of how short the needle is, a person may put it in their skin and then they start digging around, which is an infection risk. So actually using a needle that is too short or a syringe barrel that's too small can present infection risk to somebody who's trying to inject drugs intravenously.
Got a question online from John. Will the needle exchange provide referrals and resources for those addicts who are looking for a healing, a recovery from their addiction? And lawyer Neil Lane, in response?
Absolutely. And sometimes this may be their only contact with someone who wants to provide information about programs that can help them. I mean, this is about healing people and bringing them in and out of this dependency. And the only time that they may trust someone is someone who's trying to help them, who sees them as a person, and who says, and here's a card, or here's a place to call, or here's a place to go where you can get help and you can get out of this. Absolutely.
And where do they call? I mean, what kind of number's on that? I mean, Dr. Bridger?
Well, that's one of the things we're really excited about, is through the work of the Opioid Prevention Task Force, we now have a map that identifies all of the substance use treatment facilities, programs, services available throughout the city. So this map will be shared tomorrow at the summit, and it will be placed on multiple agency websites so that people can go and figure out what is the best treatment for them and where is one located close near where they live.
But still a lot of questions. A lot of people are opposed to having needle exchange programs. They think that this enables and it makes it easier for addicts. It makes it that they'll take more drugs because they have free needles. We'll talk about that when we come back from the break. The number to call in if you've got a question or a comment is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org with your observations and comments and questions. Tweet at us at @tprsource. We'll be right back after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Should Bexar County be the first county in Texas to have a syringe exchange program? This would be an opportunity for those who are addicted to drugs, injection drugs, to change out their dirty needles for clean needles. And the observation is, where other places this takes place, that it slows the spread of HIV and hepatitis and other blood-contaminated diseases. So why don't we have one already here in Bexar County, and why are we going to be the first in Texas? Why aren't these all over the place? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Let's go to Kaylee. Kaylee, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
It's great to have you.
Hi, I was wondering, I am a recovering addict myself, and although I was not injecting the drugs that I was using, I was very interested in if y'all had any volunteer opportunities for these needle exchange programs.
All right, Kaylee, really, I appreciate your calling in with that great question. So Dr. Lucy Wilkening, the over at the Fike School of Pharmacy at University of Incarnate Word.
I think that's an absolutely amazing point that that Kaylee brings up, and the concept of having peer support specialists and also having somebody there that can demonstrate that it is possible, it's possible to get clean, it's possible to be sober. I think those can be some amazing resources that syringe service programs can use, and with the ones that I've encountered in my practice, I've yet to see one that would discourage some kind of participation like that. So I think that would absolutely be something that a syringe service program in Bexar County would be interested in, is having peer support.
Colleen Bridger at the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. This is a community response, so we're going to need people from the community to step up. Is that how this works?
That's exactly right. Right now we are relying on the community to provide the programs, provide the funding, and to provide the support. So this is an all hands on deck situation, and I think that the providers would love all the volunteers that are willing to step up.
And Neil Lane, you're a local attorney, but you're also very active in the philanthropic world. Can you kind of talk about, you know, the appetite for being a support for this type of problem?
Yeah, my involvement really began as a lay church leader. And I would say that there's a huge pent-up desire to help these people, and the needle exchange is an excellent opportunity to do that. That's really how it, you know, it was being operated before the law. Now what we have is this umbrella under the county and the health professionals. They can train the people who really want to reach out to their family out there, the people, their neighbors who are suffering, and the county can give them that umbrella and also the training and the support and the knowledge, and they can give them the resources. And that this will really depend on those volunteers coming forward, the people who want to support it financially, in person, and in other ways. It's going to be absolutely essential to the success of the program.
And so, Neil, it's also been said that this is a money-saving program for taxpayers.
Absolutely it is. It's a compassionate response to suffering that actually saves the taxpayers' dollars. If you think about it, these needles cost something like 10 cents, okay? If you were to fund $50,000 for a needle exchange program and you were to stop one infectious disease and end-of-life treatment, you would have paid for the whole program. It's so expensive for the county and the medical resources that are necessary to take care of someone at the end of their life with a hepatitis C or HIV that may become full-blown AIDS because these people don't have health, you know, services, that the program would very quickly pay for itself. And the people who would pay otherwise are the taxpayers of the county. The people of Bexar County have to pay for those end-of-life medical services. If we can prevent just a handful of those from occurring, we've more than paid for the program.
Absolutely.
Okay. And do you want to add to that, Dr.?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great point. And I think there are some estimates that are published on the Center for Disease Control website where they estimate the cost for a syringe service program to prevent one HIV infection is somewhere between $4,000 and $12,000. The average cost to treat one HIV infection is about $500,000 to $600,000. So truly preventing one infection can make these types of programs self-sustainable.
And so when we talk about preventing the infections, so when we think about each individual, you know, there are people who are addicted to drugs who you don't normally identify. You just don't see them. It's like that guy's addicted to drugs. Some people have jobs and they have significant others, have no idea what that person is doing. And they go into their, you know, they live two lives. And then, so one of them, they're out doing intravenous drugs, and the other one, they go back into the other world. And so where those worlds, where that person crosses over, they're bringing that disease back into their bedroom with their family, and it just can spreads out from there. So we have to think about how this impacts the entire community, not just for the individuals who are addicted to drugs. I mean, is that right, Colleen Bridger?
Yeah, I think you said it perfectly. We often forget the collateral impacts of some of these decisions. And some of those collateral impacts, if a mom is pregnant, she can pass any infection that she gets to her baby. If she goes back and has a sexual relationship with anybody else, she can pass that on. The same thing with the young men who are driving our HIV epidemic. They are often both using intravenous drugs and having unprotected sex with multiple partners. And
right, because they live in a world where sex becomes a commodity.
Yes.
And so it's transactional to support the habit. And
exactly.
So, yeah, we want to do what we can to clean that up. So let's get another caller on the air. And this is Angela. Angela, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm an ER nurse and interact with these patients very often, and I know we've talked about the more chronic issues related to the infections, but we see a lot of the acute issues like skin abscesses, which often untreated can lead to sepsis. And so I know one of the panelists mentioned earlier the cost savings. It's a huge cost savings if we're preventing these patients from being admitted to the hospital, reoccurrent admissions, because they often come back in with abscesses or these infections. And then when a lot of these patients come in, they're so wanting someone to care. Like one of the panelists also said, we have that opportunity to really show them that we care by exchanging these needles and also have an opportunity to explain how they can get help.
All right, Angela, thank you for that. And so, Dr. Lucy, do you want to tell us more?
Yeah, I think that's a wonderful point. And I think talking about the how is important, but I think also the why. There's not a single person who wakes up one day and has the aspiration to use IV drugs. When we look at the reasons why people are addicted to drugs and why this happens, there's a few reasons. Very commonly, self-medicating things like debilitating anxiety and depression is certainly a common theme in people who use IV drugs. In addition to that, when we think about how we provide pain relief as a healthcare institution in the United States, the United States consumes about 80% of the world's supply of pain medication. Yet if you look in any oncology journal, you will find that about 60 to 70% of patients with cancer die with pain. So there's a huge disconnect with how we consume medications and how effective we are with their use. We also see a lot of perpetual use for inappropriate indications. So in a way, there is some onus to the healthcare institution as well as far as fixing these problems and why these problems occur.
Still, there's this stigma of drug use and this social conservative way of looking at things, of trying to crack down on drugs in order to prevent these problems. But we see that, you know, drugs are already illegal, and people who are caught with drugs of this nature do serious time, and, you know, this is not they don't get a pass. But we've seen people like Vice President Mike Pence, when he was a governor of Indiana, they saw an explosion of HIV in his state due to the opioid crisis, and he introduced a very aggressive needle exchange program to combat that. And so, Colleen Bridger, did that see results?
Yeah, it did. It stopped the spread. It absolutely was one of the most amazing cause and effect responses we've seen in public health in a long time. And I think what it did was also help keep some social conservatives' minds open to the fact that this is an effective intervention, and that while we do have an issue with people using IV drugs, we don't want to compound that issue with people spreading HIV.
So what do you say to somebody when they say this is enabling those folks to do drugs?
I say these folks are going to use drugs whether they use a clean needle or a dirty needle. What this does is decrease the risk of them getting an infection and spreading that infection onto others.
Then they say, okay, and Dr. Lucy?
I think that's a great point. And something that I always say to my students is, as long as human brains have been around, addiction has been around. And so that's certainly a good point. But the other thing I'd like to highlight that's been demonstrated repeatedly with other syringe service programs is a person who uses a syringe service program is 5 times more likely to enter into drug treatment. So while they may be continuing to use IV drugs, while they're using SSP program services, they are much, much more likely to engage in treatment and to establish a better relationship with healthcare providers through this channel.
Is there any evidence that shows that someone is more likely to become a heroin addict if they know they can get free needles?
In fact, there's research that shows the opposite.
That shows what?
That there's no connection between access to clean needles and increased drug use.
All right, so we're going to take another break. We invite you to call in as we talk about this program. We'll talk about more about what this pilot program could look like, what the goals are, how we measure success, what the legislature could do if this works here in Bexar County, how this could spread through Texas. So there's a lot on the line on whether or not this works and how to make it work here locally. If you got a question or a comment, if you just want to say hell yeah or hell no, give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about a proposed program. It's on the launching pad here in Bexar County, a syringe exchange program. They've gotten the green light from District Attorney Nico LaHood. We've also heard from the nominees for the general election for District Attorney for Bexar County. Both of them, Joe Gonzalez and Tilden Schaefer, both say that they would support this. So it looks like the path is clear, but still a lot of questions exist out there. How do we execute? What would it look like? An exchange program for dirty needles here in Bexar County. And Colleen Bridger, so what are the goals? How will you measure success?
The ultimate goal is to see a decrease in HIV, and we know that's something we can measure. We would love to see a decrease in hepatitis C. The data is a lot weaker on what we are allowed to collect there, but we're working on improving that. So number one would be a decrease in those two infectious diseases. Number two would be an increase in the number of people accessing treatment services. And that coincides with the Opioid Prevention Task Force's goal as well, is we want across the city to provide greater access to substance use disorder treatment and start to work to see a decline in people who are addicted to substances.
And you're saying that we can tell if there is a reduction in the spread of HIV because of all of the aggressive testing that we have going on in the community.
Exactly.
And you're still, I know last we've had you on the air last year talking about trying to encourage folks to get tested, whether or not they have any idea if they are HIV.
That's exactly right. I'll put a plug in for the fact that you get your cholesterol tested once a year. You should get your HIV test at least once in your lifetime. And if you're sexually active, once a year as well.
So are you going to be coming up with a document that goes to the legislature? How is this going to get reported back to help deal with the entire state? Because this is a statewide issue. Dr. Lucy?
I would imagine that certainly collecting data and trending this over time is going to be important, especially to make sure that the services that we're providing and how we're providing them are effective. With respect to authoring a letter to the legislature, I'm not sure about that. I might give that to my colleague here.
Lawyer Neil Lane.
So the legislation does not require a formal report, nor does it have a specific end date. But I think what we're going to see is, as this information is gathered, other communities are going to want to see the information, and other communities are going to see the cost savings and the health impact. And I think you'll see this program spread to other counties and be authorized for other places. I mean, what legislator, after seeing the positive results from the data here, will not want their own constituents to have the benefit of a program like this?
Back to the phones with Laura. If you want to call in, it's 210-614-8980. Laura, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Dr. Laura Aiken. I'm actually a pediatrician in urgent care in San Antonio, Texas. And as a pediatrician, I see lots of families come through my doors and unfortunately do have the opportunity to find families with parents who are high in my interview with them. And I think one of your panel members mentioned that having people involved in this exchange program actually got them into care faster. And I think that's a brilliant point. People use drugs, period. It is not an unknown fact. And these programs introduce them into ways, into facilities, to get them into care so they can get rehabilitation or can get healthier, can take care of their families. It is an excellent public health measure. To pretend that this isn't an issue, pretend that this has not been an issue since the early 80s, would be a shortcoming on our part. I'm highly in support of the needle exchange program.
All right, Laura, thank you for the call. I appreciate that, and I would love to hear your reaction to that call, Colleen Bridger.
I agree 100%. I'm loving our callers. They're just being so supportive and so enlightened, and it's really warming my heart.
And Dr. Lucy Wilkinson?
I want to echo Dr. Bridger's comments. It's very refreshing to hear the support from the community, and everybody's on the same page. That's another thing I always say is we're all on the same team. Individuals affected by IV drug use are our brothers and sisters and neighbors, and so it's just really great to hear the community support.
Okay, another caller. This is Ernest. And Ernest, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you so much. I just want to say how glad I am that this program is being initiated. I was behind it several years ago. I think it's so important that the general public understands that there's so many programs out there that could help save us money in the long run, per se, if you're just about money. But also the human factor, the fact that you're emphasizing that people could learn about how to overcome their problem. And I'm really glad that this is available. I'm really interested in helping, and I'll be interested to hear how I can volunteer and do those things. I'm in that position.
All right, Ernest, thank you for the call. Let me go over to Will. Will, welcome to The Source. You're on there.
Yes, I really appreciate your program. All of your programs have been excellent. My comment is this. What are we doing about the mental health aspect of these addicts?
Okay, so the mental health aspects of the addicts, can you help me figure that out, Colleen Bridger? Because I mean, these people are dealing with a lot of trauma, a lot of depression. They're self-medicating, as we hear.
Yes, and effective treatment programs are looking at both addressing a substance use disorder as a physical illness as well as a mental illness. And so the effective treatment programs are addressing the mental health issues. And, you know, if I could also put a plug in for let's go upstream a little bit and let's deal with some of these mental health issues before people feel the need to self-medicate with some of these drugs. That will go a long way to decreasing the number of people who are addicted to substances as well.
And so, Dr. Lucy?
I think those are all great points. I think the other thing that's really valuable from a syringe service program, especially for somebody who has another mental health condition in addition to a substance use disorder, is the repairing of relationships. Many of the clients who I've worked with over the years they tell you, I was afraid to come in and talk to somebody about this. I didn't know who to talk to. I had bad experiences with healthcare providers in the past. So having an avenue for people to connect with another person who is a healthcare provider in some cases and repair that relationship, I think it also just opens up another door for people to know that there is treatment out there and that there are providers who will understand and listen to what they have to say.
And treatment is hard. Recovery is hard. It's not an easy thing to do. We have to make sure that we do have the wraparound services, and we have to deal with the addiction, the sickness of the addiction. So that means we have to be aware of methadone and all those things that that are available. Is that also being thought through, Colleen Bridger?
Yes, we're having conversations right now about what does – so we're – our, the end of the Opioid Prevention Task Force's first year is September. And so the question is, what's next? And one of the things we're talking about is how do we have a more holistic, comprehensive approach to all substances as well as all mental health issues. So that's one of the things that we're debating right now is how do you take the Opioid Prevention Task Force and grow it into something that can provide a more holistic solution to these problems.
So, Neil Lane, what could go wrong here? What are the things we've got to watch out for?
Well, again, I think the things that I always worry about is that the effort turns into some kind of political football where the data is ignored and cheap short-term political points are tried to be scored. And I think when you look at the data, you have to believe in the program because there's such a wealth of data from all over the country. That's really the only concern I have. I think that what we're going to see is a tremendous outpouring of support for this program by people who know, like people like Juan who called in, love them and want to let them know, you're not alone. We love you. We want your life to mean something. We want you to be whole and to be healthy.
And Colleen Bridger, this is not, you're not having to invent this process from the scratch. This is something that is happening around the country and other communities. So are you investigating those places to discover best practices and what to watch out for, the potholes?
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, you know, I came from the state of North Carolina, a very politically conservative state, who right before I left passed legislation enabling syringe services programs throughout the entire state. So a lot of the work that I did in North Carolina is applicable here. We know what works. We know what's effective. We just need to replicate it here.
Trust is a big part of making a program like this work, making sure that if you're an addict and you know that you were, you know, you're dealing in the world of illegal drugs, how do we start that trust cycle?
That's one of the things we've been talking about in our summit planning meetings is how do we get people to come to the summit to trust that what we're saying. And I think the fact that the DA's office is going to be there at the summit, they're just not sending us a letter saying, yeah, it's okay. They're actually sending a person to say, this is okay, we support this, please move forward, is a good first step. But then, as with building trust, we just have to make sure that we do exactly what we say we're going to do. And then word of mouth, I think, is going to be the most effective way to get that word out.
The summit, the Syringe Summit, is tomorrow from 8 a.m. to noon at the Living Church at Woodlawn Point. That's at the corner of Donaldson and Campman. You can call 210-207-8780 for more information. I'll be there. And this is The Source. I want to thank our guest, Colleen Bridger, director of the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District, Dr. Lucy Wilking, the assistant professor at the Fike School of Pharmacy at the University of Incarnate Word. Also with us is the Neil Lane, local attorney. He's been advocate for needle exchange programs and other issues. I want to thank all of you for being here. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.